Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. In this year, Rabbi Schweiger discusses a Torah portion, Toldot. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member of Pardes and serves as a Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
This week's parsha is Parshat Toldot. In last year's podcast, we discussed the personality of Yitzchak. This week, I would like to discuss the personality of Esav. In the beginning of the parsha, we read of the birth of Esav. In chapter 25, verse 25, it says, "And the first one came out, red. He was all like a hairy cloak. And they called him Esav." The first picture we have of Esav are the description of his features. He's red, he's very hairy. Rabbi Shimshal Raphael Hirsch, the leading Orthodox rabbi in Germany in the 1800s, in his commentary on the Chumash, understands these descriptions of Esav as reflecting his vitality, his maturity, his love of life. From the very outset, Esav has this life force, which is very, very striking. One can see this as being indicative of someone who has a tremendous potential, who is already a made man, which is what his name means. Asui, he is made. Note that David, King David, later on in the book of Samuel, is also described as being Admoni. And there's a very interesting parallel between Esav and David. Both of them are very, very powerful figures, very, very active in their lives. And I will come back to this a little bit later. As we read on, we're told in verse 27, "Vayigdalu hanne'arim," and the lads grow up. And then with "Vayihi Esav," Esav is a man who knows how to hunt, a man of the field. Whereas Yaakov is a simple man who dwells in tents. And in verse 28, "And Yitzchak loved Esav because he is a hunter in his mouth. Rivka loved Yaakov." There are two features in this pasuk, in these verses, about Esav. One, he is a man who knows how to hunt. The other, he is a man of the field. Two features that complement each other, but are not identical. The only thing which they share in common is that with respect to both, he's called a man. And we know in other places that a man is usually indicative of a man of stature. Esav is somebody who perhaps has achieved a certain proficiency in what he does. Let me begin with the second one. Esav is an ish sadeh. We know from last week's parsha that Yitzchak is very much connected with the sadeh, with the field. In chapter 24, verse 63, we're told that Yitzchak goes out to meditate, to pray, basadeh, in the field. In our parsha, in chapter 26, we know that Yitzchak plants. So that Yitzchak is a man of the field. In that way, Esav follows his father's footsteps. There's another individual who earlier in Bereishit is connected with the field, but is described differently. In chapter 4, verse 2, we're told of the birth of twins, Cain and Hevel. Hevel is a shepherd, Cain is a worker of the land. The terminology is different. Cain is an Oved Adama, Esav is an Ish Sadeh. But in Cain's frame of reference, we see the Sadeh appearing later on in a very unfortunate way. This is in chapter 4, verse 8. And Cain speaks to Hevel his brother, and when they were in the Sadeh in the field, Cain rises up against Hevel his brother, and he kills him. In the field, Cain asserts himself, empowers himself, and the expression of his empowerment is to kill his brother. Esav is like Cain. He is a man of the field. Esav is like Yitzchak, who is also connected with the field. I bring up both examples because, so who is Esav? Does Esav follow the footsteps of Cain, or does he follow the footsteps of his father? It could go either way. Esav is also described as an Ish Yodea Tzayid, as a man who knows how to hunt. There is also a precedent for that. In chapter 10, we are told of another hunter. Chapter 10, verse 8. Verse 8 speaks about a fellow called Nimrod. Nimrod is described as being a mighty hunter before Hashem, before the Lord. And the word, the general proverb, is there is none like Nimrod, a mighty hunter before God. Nimrod is also a hunter. In Midrashic literature, the rabbis see this as being a very, very negative feature. He is deceptive. He is cunning. He deludes people. Not to mention animals. And because of his cunning, he eventually becomes, as we see in the next verse there, the first king to establish his kingdom throughout the area of Mesopotamia. Perhaps another thing to note, which is not in the text, but appears in Midrashic literature, is that Nimrod's cunning is reflected in his speech. The rabbis describe him as being a very, very charismatic figure who is able to sway the masses, ultimately to serve him. I bring this up because by Esav, Esav is described as an Ish Yodea Tzayid. But in verse 28, Yitzchak loves Esav ki tzayed befiv. He is a hunter in his mouth. And there are two explanations given to this verse by the commentaries. One explanation is that Esav provides the hunt for Yitzchak's mouth. He provides him with meat, with delicious food, which is why Yitzchak loves him. But another point of view says that the mouth which we're speaking about is not the mouth of Yitzchak, but the mouth of Esav. Yitzchak loves the hunt which comes out of the mouth of Esav. There is a midrash which says that Esav would trick his father. He would ask him all kinds of halachic questions, legal niceties, very, very abstract questions, as a way of perhaps showing his father his commitment to his traditions. But perhaps we could take this another way, without necessarily speaking about Esav being such a devious individual. Maybe Esav is just a very charismatic individual who captivates you, who traps you with his words, mesmerizes you. And this is what attracts Yitzchak. If I were to take the two verses that we have that describe Esav when he grows up, on the one hand, Esav displays features which are similar to his father. He is the person who is in the field. Esav also has a certain power of speech, perhaps even a power of speech which his father does not have. Last year we spoke about Yitzchak's power of speech in terms of prayer, but it is clear that Yitzchak is much more a man of action than words, and is certainly not charismatic. And therefore, the fact that Esav can be a man of the field, but also a master of speech, have charisma, for Yitzchak becomes a winning combination, which attracts him to Esav. I would like to note that there are various commentaries who go out of their way to say, in verse 28, that Yitzchak loves Esav also. And they presuppose, obviously, he loves Yaakov. But it comes to teach us that he also loves Esav. But the simple meaning of the text is that Yitzchak loves Esav only. Or maybe we should say, in a more pronounced way than he loves Yaakov, Yitzchak sees in Esav the qualities of leadership, of mastery. Earlier I mentioned the parallel to Nimrod. Nimrod clearly uses his charisma to rule. Esav has that capacity. But rule does not have to be seen as something negative. It could be something which is very, very positive. And especially if Yitzchak is looking at the future of the Jewish people, ultimately, if they're going to become a nation, they will need to have a ruler, which makes Esav someone who will play a central role in that process. When we look further in chapter 25, we have another glimpse of who Esav is. Esav comes from the field and he is tired. Yaakov is making a lentil soup. And Esav seems to be preoccupied with that red stuff. He would like to gulp it down. And then Yaakov makes a deal that he can't refuse. he exploits a situation. Esav should sell him the birthright in exchange for the food. I would like to look at verse 34. It speaks about Yaakov giving Esav bread and the lentil soup. And then we have a series of verbs. He ate, he drank, he got up, he went, and Esav despised the birthright. From the end of this verse, with all the verbs that are in it, on the one hand we get a picture of Esav, who is not necessarily a man of words, but of Esav, who is a man of action. Perhaps who is very impatient. And perhaps that impatience is also reflected in someone who is very much preoccupied with the now, who's prepared to sacrifice his future, perhaps his destiny, for immediate gratification. So that this little episode perhaps presents, or begins to present, a negative side to Esav. And this is reflected very clearly in the word Esav despised the birthright, where I'm understanding the birthright to be indicative of a role that he should play, a role with far-reaching implications. Let us move on to chapter 27, where we have the story of the blessing which Yitzchak wants to give to Esav, a major story of the parsha. In chapter 27, verse 1, we're told, "And when Yitzchak became old and his eyes are dimming, he calls for Esav, his older son, and says to him, 'My son.' And Esav responds, 'I am here.' And he says to him, 'I am old, I don't know when I'm going to die. Take your instruments, your hunting instruments, and go and hunt me something. Make me a delicious dish, as I like. Bring it to me, I will eat it, in order that I should bless you before I die.'" And many commentaries are disturbed by the question, how could Yitzchak be willing to give the blessing to Esav? Doesn't Yitzchak realize who Esav is? How can Yitzchak be prepared to have him be the one to carry on the destiny, the role of the house of Abraham? And so there are commentaries who want to say that in fact the blessing which Yitzchak wants to give him is not the blessing of Abraham, is not to be the one to carry on their life works, their life's work. But it would seem from this section that this blessing is a very significant blessing. And even if it's not the blessing, but it may be one which is inextricably bound with the other. So if I go back to my question earlier, doesn't Yitzchak know who Esav is? In fact, if we look at the end of chapter 26, we're told another detail of Esav's life. Esav, when he was 40 years old, gets married. Esav imitates his father. Not only does he try to be like his father in terms of his profession, being a man of the field, just as Yitzchak got married at the age of 40, he gets married at the age of 40. But that's as far as the comparison goes. Esav marries two women. Yitzchak married only one. But even more significantly, the two women he marries are Hittites / Canaanites. Abraham was very insistent when he sent his servant to not have him take a Canaanite woman to be Yitzchak's wife. And here is Esav, who parts ways with that tradition. And we're told in verse 35, these wives are a source of bitterness, distress to Yitzchak and to Rivka. It would seem to be very clear from this verse that Yitzchak does have a sense of the downside of Esav, that Esav is doing something which is very much against his will, his vision. And yet, nevertheless, in chapter 27, he is ready to give him a blessing. When we look at the language of chapter 27, verse 1, it sounds like the Akedah, the binding of Isaac. In the same way God calls out to Abraham, and Abraham responds, Hineni. Yitzchak calls out to Esav, and he responds, Hineni. And if we take this analogy a little bit further, God is testing Abraham. The test is whether Abraham has unconditional love for God, unconditional obedience to God. And one could say, with Yitzchak and Esav, this is a test. To what degree does Esav show this obedience to his father? I won't say unconditional, but I will say significant obedience to his father. And just as when Abraham says, Hineni, that is an expression of diligence, an expression of preparedness. I am here ready to do whatever you ask of me. Esav has the same response to his father. And this is very much to the credit of Esav. Abraham offers up a sacrifice to God in the Akedah. He is meant to sacrifice his son. In the end, he sacrifices the ram. And God very much is pleased by the offering which he brings. Yitzchak is asking Esav to bring him the equivalent of a sacrifice, to bring him a very special meal, a meal which will invoke Yitzchak's blessing. Let me skip most of this section, which really focuses on what Jacob did. I would like to look only at the very end. When Jacob comes before Yitzchak, masquerading as Esav, with a goatskin on his arms, bringing him this delicious meal, Yitzchak is very troubled because he doesn't know who this person really is. And he probes to try to discover the true identity of that individual. And the culmination of his probing is in chapter 27, verse 27, when it says that Jacob came near and he kissed him, and Yitzchak then smells the smell of his clothing and he blesses him. And he says, behold, the smell of my son is like the smell of the field which God has blessed. And then he goes on and gives him this beautiful blessing. What happens in this verse? Yitzchak does not know the true identity of this individual. But the blessing which he gives him is not a mistake. because Yitzchak wants to give the blessing to the individual who has the smell, the fragrance of the field which God has blessed. The test that Yitzchak set up for Esav is what type of man of the field is Esav. Is Esav the man of the field that we see with Cain, with Cain, who rises up against his brother and kills him? The man of the field who, when he brings an offering to God, brings not the best of what is grown in the field, but of the worst, of that which is dispensable? Or is Esav going to be the one who follows the tradition of his father, who sees the field as the place of the interface between heaven and earth, between God and man, between material and spiritual? Can Esav somehow bring that sense of spirituality and lift up the material world? That is the significance of the Garden of Eden. The Garden of Eden is a place where you have that I-thou encounter. I would speculate that in fact Esav is not that person. Yaakov is that person. And although it is very problematic that Yaakov gets this blessing through deceit, yet nevertheless, the blessing is validated. The blessing is effective, because despite the deceit, Yaakov is beginning the process of becoming a man of the field which God has blessed. There's a very interesting midrash which says that the clothing which Rivka put on Yaakov was the clothing that Esav had left deposited with his mother, but were very special garments. These were the garments that somehow Esav had received from Nimrod, the arch hunter. Interestingly, the Midrash says that these were also the garments which God had given to Adam and Eve to clothe them, garments of royalty in the aftermath of the Garden of Eden. The clothing is clothing of royalty. Nimrod was a man of royalty. Esav could have also been a man of royalty. According to the rabbinic understanding, Nimrod abused his royalty by subjugating the people around him, by enslaving the people around him. Esav could have been a different model of a king. And perhaps this brings me to what I mentioned earlier, the literary analogy between Esav and King David. Both of them are red. Both of them have a vitality. Both of them have a potential to be leaders. And in fact, we know that red is also the color of blood. And perhaps I could add bloodshed. In chapter 27, Yitzchak goes on to give Esav a blessing. The blessing is that you shall live by the sword. King David also lived by the sword. The difference, though, is that Esav used his sword to enslave, to subjugate. We are told that Esav Hu Edom. Esav is Edom. The rabbis in the Midrash identify Edom with what later on is Rome, the mighty empire that subjugated so many people that eventually destroyed the temple. That is the destiny which Esav took upon himself. King David engaged in battle also. But ultimately, all of his battles laid the foundation of Jewish peoplehood. And ultimately, were a precursor of the establishment of the temple. Yitzchak loved Esav and saw the potential Esav had. It was a potential which unfortunately was not actualized, because there was another side to Esav, which I mentioned earlier. The side of an Esav who perhaps was able to incorporate the form without the content, who was married at 40 years old, but married Canaanites, of an Esav who despised the birthright, who was too preoccupied with the present and was willing to compromise the future for the moment. It is those qualities of Esav which ultimately forfeited him to take on that leadership position in the Jewish people. Esav is a very tragic figure. And when I look at one verse at the end of chapter 27, I, and not only me, the rabbis, can feel an empathy with Esav. In chapter 27, verse 34, when Esav heard the words of his father, which words? The words of his father validating the blessing which he had just given Jacob. Esav cries out a great cry, a bitter cry, exceedingly bitter, and says to his father, bless me also, my father. And at that moment, we can see the image of an Esav who's wounded, who's in pain, who's screaming, who's pleading with his father. We can see an Esav who does love his father, who does respect him, who takes his father very, very seriously, but who unfortunately does not have the determination to carry through his father's destiny to the end. This is his tragedy. And one could say his tragedy becomes the tragedy of the Jewish people, because ultimately the descendants of Esav become the major nemesis of the Jewish people. From Esav comes Amalek, the people who the Jewish people are engaged in an everlasting war with. Let me end with another point which is made by Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch in our parasha. To go back to the beginning of the parasha, it says in chapter 25, verse 27, when the lads grew up. And Rabbi Hirsch makes a very interesting observation. He said that it's only when the lads grew up that all of a sudden it became clear that they were very, very different personalities. And he, in fact, critiques Yitzchak, Rivka, for not having noticed it earlier. And he goes into a whole polemic about how one needs to educate children. And he quotes a rabbinic comment which says, Chanoch na'ar al pi darko. Educate a child according to his path. He claims that Yitzchak made a tragic mistake. Yitzchak did not realize who Esav really was and imposed upon him the same education that he gave to Yaakov, the same education that he thought was fit for him. And Rabbi Hirsch says, it is important to know who your child is. It is important to be able to notice that very early and to be careful to educate them, not according to who you are, but according to who they are. And the conclusion one can draw from his words is that had Esav received a different education, had Esav been understood properly by Yitzchak, cultivated the right way, he could have remained within the Jewish people. Not only remained, but contributed significantly to the development of the Jewish people. When Rivka is told, you have two nations in your womb, and they will strive with each other. The expression in Hebrew is, Ula'om mila'om ye'ematz. For those who would like to see this, this is chapter 25. Verse 23. La'om mila'om ye'ematz is generally understood, and they will strive, be in conflict with each other. But in fact, the word ye'ematz means strengthened. And therefore, one could also read it as these two nations will strengthen, empower each other. Yaakov and Esav could have been a model of two brothers who are very different, who use their strengths to empower each other, to overcome the weaknesses of the other, who together build a vibrant nation because of what each one has to bring. But perhaps because of a failure of education, Esav in the end comes to a tragic end, which is not only his tragedy, but our tragedy. Ma'ase avot siman lebanim. The actions of the fathers should be assigned to the children. We should learn from this. Realize that people have different potentials. To be able to capitalize on those positive features and to not let them degenerate to become negative, perhaps even horrific. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated. Please send your email via podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.